Inside a postal annex, next to a nail salon and tutoring center in Irvine, California, is a nondescript copper-colored box, number 819. It is at the center of a national controversy over whether or not women should have access to an abortion. Box 819 is connected to billionaires, right-wing anti-abortion activists and their activist lawyers, hackers, members of Congress, and a prominent presidential candidate.
For a century, Americans have helped heal and care for millions in need. Our values propelled extraordinary innovation. America made the world better. So how did America become a country that harvests organs from unborn children? And who has the courage to stop it? Ted Cruz will prosecute and defund Planned Parenthood. Help Cruz restore.
In the summer of 2015, news reports broadcasted the work of a group claiming to be investigative reporters who had footage of doctors and company representatives who were allegedly working in an illegal fetal tissue industry.
Today, an anti-abortion group released a fourth undercover video that it says shows Planned Parenthood doctors discussing how to distribute the body parts of fetuses.
The organization behind the uproar is the Center for Medical Progress, a nonprofit organization, a registered charity with tax-deductible status granted by the IRS, and a registered company with the Secretary of State in California. The Center for Medical Progress has no office, no laboratories, and no one with a medical background performing research has ever been associated with it. All it has is that envelope-sized box, number 819. And when you try to contact someone at the Center for Medical Progress by the number listed on the CMP website, you're directed straight to their voicemail.
You've reached the Center for Medical Progress. Please leave your name and phone number and we'll return your call shortly. Thank you.
That was David DeLeiden, the director of the Center for Medical Progress. Many claim he didn't perform any acts of journalism leading up to his undercover operation. He trained instead in the art of undercover video and audio recording, learning to conceal cameras and clothing, water bottles and bags, and illegally using fake identification and presenting himself as an executive in his shell company with his adopted alias, Robert Sarkis. You can hear DeLeiden introduce himself with his alias at the start of almost all of his videos, as a procurement manager for a company called Biomax Procurement Services, a company completely designed to deceive the National Abortion Federation with no actual functionality.
Hi.
Hello. Robert Sarkis, Biomax Procurement Manager. I'm Robert Sarkis,
the procurement manager. Nice to meet you.
The recording of secret tapes is not something new to DeLeiden and his group of anti-abortion activists. His training in guerrilla journalism began at Claremont McKenna College, a fairly conservative liberal arts school nestled in the foothills of California's Inland Empire, between San Bernardino and Los Angeles. DeLeiden was a highly visible pro-life activist on campus.
My name is Ralph Rossum. I'm the Salvatore Professor of American Constitutionalism at Claremont McKenna College.
Rossum was one of DeLeiden's professors at Claremont McKenna College, and in 2011, he was DeLeiden's senior thesis advisor.
The thesis was on personhood in American abortion jurisprudence.
He says DeLeiden was engaging in controversial videotaping at women's health and abortion events, even in college.
David had been very much active in the pro-life movement as an undergraduate at CMC before he took my course, before he started to write the thesis. He had been engaged in some episodes where he and others would attend talks given by pro-abortion activists, and they would attempt to tape and record what was said there. They found themselves kicked off the Pomona College campus for a while because of their actions. It was simply their presence. They weren't engaging in any overt acts. They were simply there and recording things that the organizers of these events did not want want recorded.
And from what I understand, I mean, it would seem like, you know, don't most organizations like keep track of when they do that? Or it just seems like basic record keeping, right?
I don't know if this is irrelevant, but Serena, this is David. David's the head of the live action.
Now I get it. Yeah, I don't want to talk about this more, but you're just engaging this back and forth stuff that's like, I know the whole live action.
It's very interesting. I mean, I would love to talk to you.
It's totally interesting, but like, it's really not doing anything to further women's health. It's just like stoking your cause. I'm not interested in doing that. I'm sorry.
So you don't want to talk about it.
This is a video captured by Delighton in 2009. It shows a representative from Planned Parenthood sitting on a couch facing a group of students who attended an intimate event put on by a woman's student group at Pomona College, a neighboring school in the Consortium of Universities in Claremont. After discovering that the person disrupting the women's health meeting is part of Live Action, a large anti-choice organization, the conversation grew hostile and erupted as soon as Delighton's camera became visible.
And being a family member and a friend and supporting our friends when they're facing, you know, pregnancy scares or unplanned pregnancies. You know, I think that we have to do. Are you videotaping me?
Mm-hmm.
Is that permitted? I didn't consent to be videotaped.
This is a public forum, but if you want us to leave, we can leave. I mean, you can't keep us here.
I did not consent to be videotaped. And in California, it is against the law to record someone without their consent.
That's in a private conversation. This isn't really private.
This is a Vox Club.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Vox Club meeting. I did not consent to be videotaped.
Yeah, it's a public meeting, right?
In states like California, where the Delighton College video was produced, recording someone's speech requires two-party consent if they have an expectation of privacy. Meaning, if you want to record someone at a non-public event or meeting, they have to agree or at least know that you're recording. There is no official campus or legal ruling as to whether or not Delighton broke the law by recording at the school event. He was, however, prohibited from setting foot on the Pomona College campus for a while. The first known undercover video produced by Delighton, which featured the Planned Parenthood representative at Pomona College, was later published on YouTube under the account name Anonymous59943. Where the representative was center screen and fully visible, she can be heard multiple times saying she never consented to being recorded, expecting a private conversation.
I would like for you to really delete the footage because I did not consent to be videotaped. You did not announce that you were videotaping. As far as I'm concerned, you've been doing it in secret, but I feel like I've been ambushed and put in a position where you're trying to, you know, turn this for your own agenda.
Like a collegiate athlete getting drafted to the pros, Delighton stepped up his game after graduation. He and other longtime anti-abortion activists founded his company and sparked a national controversy when they launched their videos using questionable tactics. And now, Delighton and his attorneys say he and members of his team are investigative journalists working undercover to expose what they call unlawful actions, which they claim take place at fetal tissue conferences.
Actions that very plausibly would constitute a violation of federal law, namely the selling of body parts from abortion. To argue that the First Amendment doesn't protect you when you are exposing criminal action would be that those actions by Delighton should be no less protected because he is part of a small little enterprise, that his actions should be no less protected than that of mighty CBS.
Professor Rossum is explaining the reasoning behind why some journalists work undercover in exposing illegal activities, the claim Delighton and his lawyers make in defending their actions. Rossum refers to the legacy media going undercover, arguing that Delighton deserves the same type of protections as an independent journalist, which also cover ABC, CBS, and other publications. If Delighton and his team are journalists reporting on an investigative story and trying to expose illegal activities, what did they do wrong, if anything at all?
This "we are journalists, story that David Dalyden and the Center for Medical Progress is propagating in the media is simply a ruse to confuse people, because it's not an argument that works in a court of law.
That was Derek Foran from the Morris and Forrester law firm in San Francisco, the firm representing the National Abortion Federation pro bono in federal court.
They have continually said, we did this because we suspected criminal activity was afoot. They had an opportunity to brief that issue in federal court in connection with our preliminary injunction motion. They put in front of the court something like 19 clips out of 504 hours, 19 clips that they said constituted evidence of criminal activity.
The judge in the district court hearing the original complaint viewed the clips that Leiden and his attorneys put forth to the court and still sided with the National Abortion Federation.
He walked through in some detail each and every one of these clips, which, by the way, amounts to something like less than 0.5% of the overall total that they were taken. And he walked through each of those clips and said there is zero evidence of any wrongdoing. It's all taken out of context. There's simply no evidence to support these claims. The entire game here was to create a political firestorm in order to defund Planned Parenthood.
In July of 2015, the National Abortion Federation moved quickly to file a lawsuit against the Leiden and the Center for Medical Progress in San Francisco federal court in order to prevent them from publishing more videos and sharing them with other online anti-abortion outlets.
That's one of the things I'm especially proud of. We were one of the first out of the gate to get after these guys, and we did it in a big way. And we were able to prevent the disclosure of wholesale 504 hours of video and audio these guys took at our meetings. This was a high-tech surveillance campaign.
After the initial news reports began to air, Foran and the attorneys at Morris and Forrester filed an injunction with the court to stop the bleeding. Judge William Orrick, the presiding judge over the suit in federal court, put in place a restraining order to prevent further videos from being published. There is no audio or videotape of the proceedings, so the order the judge placed on Dalyden and the Center for Medical Progress is as follows. I ordered that the defendants were restrained and enjoined from 1. Publishing or otherwise disclosing to any third party any video, audio, photographic, or other recordings taken, or any confidential information learned at any National Abortion Federation annual meetings. 2. Publishing or otherwise disclosing to any third party the dates or locations of any future National Abortion Federation meetings. And 3. Publishing or otherwise disclosing to any third party the names or addresses of any National Abortion Federation members learned at any National Abortion Federation annual meetings. The Leiden and his group, posing as human tissue procurers, signed non-disclosure agreements in the 3 years that they attended conferences in California, Maryland, Texas, and other states, promising to keep the information and identities of the attendees private. Instead, they recorded the meetings and published the videos on the World Wide Web, adding dramatic music and using bites out of context.
Yesterday was the first time she said people wanted longer. And then, but like I said, always as many intact livers as possible.
Yeah, a dime a dozen.
The law is very, very clear on this. The U.S. Supreme Court has spoken on this issue. And the basic rule is journalists have no immunity from laws that are generally applicable to the rest of the society. That is, they can't enter into and breach contracts. They can't commit fraud. They can't tape people without their consent in California and many other states. They can't get fake driver's license. They can't mock up fake companies to hide their true motives and purposes. They can't defraud the federal and state government into believing that they're not for profit and therefore gain favorable tax treatment. And these guys did all of that in our case in spades.
Okay, so we're going to make you sign a statement that you're not going to divulge the fact that we are discussing a criminal enterprise. That we're discussing the selling of body parts.
The breaching of contracts is at the center of the case. The secret tapes and videos just happen to be a result of the contracts being broken. Here's the Leiden outside of the United States District Court for the Northern District of California in San Francisco, making the argument that the confidentiality agreements are not important at all.
It cuts to the whole prior restraint problem with this, with the way that this case is going to begin with. You know, the whole issue of whether or not, whether there's one confidentiality agreement or two confidentiality agreements, whether any or either of them are actually binding or valid, whether they're enforceable.
Those contracts are in place precisely because they represent a vilified and terrorized community of physicians who are willing to put themselves on the line every single day to do what they do.
Once again, NAF attorney Derek Foran.
So these confidentiality agreements perform an incredibly important role for the National Abortion Federation, because if it wasn't for those agreements, the David DeLeidens and the other folks who would seek to do them harm would be able to gain access to their meetings, and we wouldn't be able to prevent them from subsequently publishing information from our meetings, smearing our members and so forth.
DeLeiden and the Center for Medical Progress are being hit from all sides. They are being sued in Los Angeles Superior Court by Stem Express, a fetal tissue company in Northern California, just outside Sacramento. DeLeiden and his companions are facing criminal charges in Texas. And just recently, Kamala Harris, the California Attorney General and United States Senate candidate, issued a warrant to search DeLeiden's Huntington Beach apartment, seizing videos and equipment, yet no criminal charges have been filed. The reason it is so important for the National Abortion Federation to have a federal court issue a restraining order was to prevent any further publishing or sharing of the videos. After the restraining order was put into place, GotNews.com, a separate online anti-abortion entity, published 5 hours of video violating Judge Orrick's orders. The publisher of the video was Charles C. Johnson, the director of GotNews.com. Johnson was asked to reveal the source of the videos in court, and instead wrapped himself in California's Shield Law, which allows journalists to protect their sources. Johnson revealed to the Washington Post that his source was a congressional aide, then later rescinding his statement, claiming he did not know the source of the videos in court. The same videos captured and produced by his co-pro-life advocate, David DeLeiden. And oh yeah.
Charles Johnson is an extraordinary human being. I did supervise his senior thesis. At the end of the day, I believe it is about 280 pages in length, an extraordinarily lengthy senior thesis.
That again was Claremont McKenna professor Ralph Rossum describing Johnson's thesis, which he also supervised. DeLeiden and Johnson not only had the same thesis advisor, but were roommates at Claremont McKenna College and have publicly remained friends. Johnson is holding firm and keeping the source of his tapes confidential, while his former roommate and college buddy boasts about producing the tapes and publicly denounces anyone else who takes credit for the work.
The driving force behind the entire project was me. It was my brainchild from the very beginning. But the responsibility for this project is absolutely and primarily on my shoulders.
Johnson and DeLeiden are tied together by certain bonds, and they are both protected from revealing themselves or anyone else as sources for their materials because of their claims to be journalists and the state's Shield Law, which protects journalists. But some argue that the law was not intended to work on behalf of advocates for a cause.
Clearly, the intent at the time that this was passed by the legislature, and to me it's very clear here in the definition, it was this had to be a journalist, not somebody who can claim they're a journalist by not working for a recognized news organization. My name is Susie Swatt, and I am a former legislative employee at the California State Legislature.
Susie spent a few decades working for the state legislature and was on the legislative staff which moved the shield protection from a statute to making it part of the state's constitution, crafting the law in order to protect journalists.
This was clearly laid out in our ACA 4, and it said a publisher, editor, reporter, or other person connected with or employed upon a newspaper, magazine, or other periodical publication, or by a press association or wire service, or any person who has been so connected or employed, shall not be judged in contempt of a judicial, legislative, or administrative body, or any other body having power to issue subpoenas, for refusing to disclose the source, or for refusing to disclose any unpublished information obtained.
The federal court case between the National Abortion Federation and the Center for Medical Progress may be propelled all the way to the Supreme Court. Both groups hope to come away from the case with the court's siding in their favor. But a peripheral outcome to this case may be the court's deciding on the definition of a journalist whether or not bloggers, social issue activists, and radicals can claim to be journalists and exploit the few qualified privileges journalists have. Those who desire to utilize hidden cameras, whether they're journalists or not, will be paying attention to the outcome of this case, because the ruling may put into play whether or not the practice of undercover journalism will remain legal across the country. David DeLeiden and his attorney for the NAF case, Katie Short, were contacted but declined to participate in this radio story. You can find their statements from previous reporting on this topic, along with photos of DeLeiden and his team, or videos unpublished by the Center for Medical Progress on the Los Angeles Times website under the headlines, "Are Secret Planned Parenthood Videos Protected Under the First Amendment?" and "How Anti-Abortion Activists Use Undercover Planned Parenthood Videos to Further a Political Cause." The reporting of these stories was in collaboration with the students at the Investigative Reporting Program at UC Berkeley and with the Los Angeles Times. The music composed for this piece was produced by Ben Sound at bensound.com, and the sound effects were produced by Just Sound Effects. For Alyssa Greenberg, Bo Kovitz, Jenny Marinka, Ted Anderson, Elizabeth Herman, Jeremy Brennenstahl, and Paige St. John from the Los Angeles Times, I'm Gabriel Sanchez, and thank you.